Hey, America.
Start listening now.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Eric. Welcome back.
Hey.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
It's good to be back.
Yeah. Where's Danny? You totally left him at Amsterdam Airport, didn't you?
Oh, God. Ha ha. He's in Amsterdam. And welcome to 12 Points from America, a Eurovision Song Contest podcast from America, the country that can't even. I'm Eric.
I'm Samantha.
And I'm Derek.
Oh, and Derek's on the show now.
Yay.
Hi, Derek.
Hey, everybody.
Welcome. Hey.
Oh.
That's our big announcement. And that's our show. Thanks for listening. you can check us out on social media if you want to yell at us or tell us how you feel about stuff. We're on Twitter at 12pointsUSA. Otherwise,
Facebook,
12 points.
Same place, too.
Yep. Same thing on Facebook, 12 points from America
at gmail.com.
I'm bad at this. I'm really
still,
bad at this.
You're still jet lagged, buddy.
That's true. I'm super, super jet lagged. It's been 2 weeks and I'm still jet lagged. It's horrible, but I'm back.
There's only one solution to this. You're just going to have to get your butt back to Europe.
I guess. Yeah, I think I am. And I feel like there's a thing that we talk about on this show that would be the perfect thing to go to do that. It's the 2020 Eurovision Song Contest, for which we have a theme.
Yes.
I don't understand the theme. Somebody explain the theme to me.
It's okay. It was just unveiled today by the folks over at the Dutch broadcaster. It is open up.
Open up.
Open up.
Open up. Like it's open wide for the airplane that's actually horrible baby food.
Or
that's the theme.
Yeah, or like imagine Serhat in his original career track as a dentist as he hovers over you with his one monocle saying, open up and say na na na.
Is it safe?
It's never safe, Derek. It will never be safe again.
Well, this is going to be a horrifying experience. Open up. We're all going to open up and visit Rotterdam. So I guess we need to prepare to open up in May of next year. It's going to be great. I can't wait to open up.
I mean, I guess they're going for open up your mind, open up your heart, open up your
wallet
and buy tickets and...
Open up your phone app and vote.
Yeah.
Ah.
Open up your mouth and eat all of the stroopwafels you can get your grubby
open
little
up
fingers
a
on.
A great bottle of Chocomel.
Oh. So that was the libation that you kind of fell in love with.
Yeah,
when you were in
it's really good that I only found out about it like the last day we were there, because if it had been like the first day we were there, it would have been a serious problem. Mm. I had a lot of those in the like 2 days that I was aware they existed. They're so good. It's just a chocolate milk drink.
It's like what Yoohoo wishes it could be.
Yoohoo cannot, like, lick the ground that Chocomel walks on. That's the reality of it. Chocomel is my favorite thing in the world. End of story. That's my contribution to the podcast.
Well, okay.
Yep, see you guys.
All right, bye.
Bye, Eric.
See ya.
So, Sam, what are we talking about today?
Well, we're going to pick Eric's brain a little bit, like, as we're thinking about going back to the Netherlands next year, going to Rotterdam, talking about what life is like in the Eurovision bubble. It'll be Derek's, it'll be your fifth? It'll be...
Six, actually.
Your sixth? Oh, my gosh.
I know, right?
Wow.
What am I doing wrong?
It'll be my tenth.
Wow.
Holy crap. And
it's going to be my first.
Yeah.
It's going to be my first. It's great.
Happy boy.
I'm a happy boy.
Yeah. But before we dive into everything that you can expect behind the scenes, why don't we just dive a little bit into the news? Like I said, we already touched a little bit on this new theme.
Open up!
# open up.
Make open up yours.
It probably will be. Make open up yours.
Sure. I don't know.
Wow, that's a callback right there.
I know. I got a lot of them. I'll be here all night because I live here. So let's see. We've got a full lineup for Junior Eurovision.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be talking about that quite a bit more in the next few episodes. We're going to preview the contest and talk about some history there, because I don't know a ton about June Eurovision, as I like to call it.
And nobody else likes to.
I bet some people do.
Not
maybe Danny does. If Danny were here, he would have my back. Come back, Danny.
He's just running up and down the streets of Amsterdam right now, just yelling out, June Eurovision!
Mm-hmm.
To a whole bunch of...
Well, he's biking. He's not running.
Oh, fair
he's
enough.
He's biking. But yeah, we have 19 songs.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yep.
From all over the place. We have some countries that are not normal Eurovision participants,
mm-hmm.
like Kazakhstan.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. I don't want to dive too deep into that, because we're going to be going over it a bunch over the next few weeks. But when is the contest happening again?
That will be on Sunday, the 24th of November, 2019, at the Gliwice Arena in Gliwice, Silesia, Poland.
Gliwice.
Gliwice.
Gesundheit. Yeah.
Hope you've had your shots.
Other big possible news, like this isn't real news, but it's potential news, is there are some rumblings that there are going to be a few discussions about the main Eurovision Prime, as it were, possibly making some changes to the voting system. Now, the last few years, there have been some immensely popular songs with the fan vote, but the fan vote is only 50% of the total that goes towards determining who wins. The rest is a jury vote. As you can imagine, public, not crazy about how this has gone a couple of different times. This year would be an example of that. Kano from Norway won the public vote. Sam's smiling at me because she knows how I feel about that song and how great it was and how it maybe should have won. I don't know.
And how Norwegian you are.
I'm like 5/8 Norwegian.
You're majority Norwegian.
Yeah, well, it's a small majority. It's a narrow majority. Anyway, it should have won. And it won the public vote. Did not do especially great.
Jury, yeah.
The jury vote. I don't know if that specifically is the impetus. There have been a few other examples of this over the last few years. Russia would have won.
In 2016.
Italy would have won in 2015 if we had only had a public televote. And I don't know that that's necessarily specifically what they're looking at doing, but it's a possibility.
I think there's always going to be somebody who's going to be ticked off by a result.
True.
You know, you can't please absolutely everybody. If you go for a full jury, then, you know, where's the vote of the people? It also will mess with viewing figures and participation numbers, of course, which, frankly, this is a TV show. You do care about ratings. Mm-hmm. But if you go entirely for the public, you may end up with winners like, or close to winners like we've had in the past, that are a little bit more off the wall and may not necessarily be the most commercially friendly. You might get the crazy stuff like the Brunovsky Babushki in 2012 that came in second, or, you know, Verka Serduchka back in 2007. This is, again, a different voting system, but she rose to second. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to strike that kind of balance between the people versus the people who think they know better than the other people.
Right, which is everyone.
Yeah, exactly. Sort of. Exactly.
So I guess my question is, what do you think they should do, if anything, and what do you think they will do?
If it were me, I think the first thing that I would do if I, you know, if I had Jan Ole Sound's job, I would increase the sizes of the juries. Right now it's only 5 people per country, and that doesn't lend itself to a lot of diversity. It doesn't really lend itself to decent gender or age balance. I say move it from 5 to 10 or maybe even larger, which granted would be half the population of San Marino, but you know, it's neither here nor there.
That's fine. The other half is competing. So.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it would be really helpful too if they're balancing it out, then we could say the jury's only worth half as much as the televote.
Oh, so it would make it a 1/3 and then 2/3.
Yeah, they could have effectively just double the televote.
That could be a thing.
Of course, then the scores are going to be like over 1,000.
Oh my God.
That would be interesting to see. Do you think they will do anything?
I think they'll probably play around with some ideas. I think that, I mean, this is not necessarily a contest that is set in stone. It's it's flexible, and you know, you can play around with rules or presentations of points, not too oddly. I mean, that's something that they can do. My worry, however, is that they're going to do something like what they do with Junior, which is where they have national juries, but then they'll also have a mass public televote, or in this case, a mass internet vote.
So just like one vote.
One massive popular vote.
Ooh, that boy.
Is not necessarily based on borders, so people can vote for their own country. In the case of Junior, you have to vote for at least 3 songs. So you can vote for your own country, but you have to vote for at least 2 others. I think it's you have to vote between 3 or 5 songs.
But that's got to favor countries like Russia with just tons and tons and tons of viewers, right?
I would think so. Either tons of viewers, or in the case that we saw last year when Poland's Roxy Wiegel won, singers or artists with large social media presences. Mm-hmm. You know, like you whip your Instagram followers up into a frenzy, and if you've got a number of followers like Roxy Wiegel did last year, that will get you really very far. That you will also have people playing with strategic voting, saying, oh yeah, I'm going to vote for, say, Poland, and then send my other votes to the songs that I don't think will do very well.
Mm.
They're mostly voting using an app, right?
Yeah.
They're not calling in anymore.
No, it's an app. It's all app-based.
Okay, so the young people just, they have it on their phone. They don't even have to watch the show. They could just say, this is my favorite, and there's 2 more.
Right, and honestly, at Junior, the first entire section of voting happens before the show even happens. The voting window actually opens a couple of days before the contest, and people are voting on rehearsal clips. And then the voting window closes when the show begins, and then it opens up again after the last song is performed.
I don't know how I feel about that.
I know, it's a little weird. I just hope that Eurovision proper, like big grown-up Eurovision, doesn't tend towards that.
Oh, God, I can't imagine they would.
I hope not.
So in bigger Eurovision news, we've got some rumblings from some old friends, some former Eurovision artists, friends of the show, obviously, and a prospective contestant from this past year and this upcoming year as well. Duncan Lawrence, our winner from last year, just released a new single. It is called Love Don't Hate It, and it's great. It's really good.
It is really solid.
I mean, I've been excited to hear from him since he won, just because
he's
very good. He's a great singer, and he had just sort of this straightforward ballad, and it's grown on me. It's solid, but I want to hear a bop, and I did. This one's a bop. It's great.
Oh really?
It's really, really good.
You're giving it full-on bop status, eh?
Mm-hmm. Mons Zambalov, our winner from 2015, has a new album out that is it's a Mons album. Luca Hani, one of our favorites from this past year, I think, from Switzerland. Mm-hmm. He's got a new single called Bella Bella, which is also pretty good. And Kano, the deserving winner, has a song called Dancing in the Smoke that is very much a Kano song.
I hear you dancing in the smoke.
Glad those guys stuck around.
Good. They're having
really,
a blast.
Really glad. Oh, yeah. They seem like a fun group. We haven't heard any songs from her yet, but we also mentioned this in a couple episodes ago. Allie Ryan, who was a German national final competitor last year, had what I think was easily the best song in that group. Sam, I know you're a fan of it as well.
Certainly. Where Your Love Was a Solid. That was undeniably a bop.
Yes. It is full of boppitude. Didn't win. Lost to a song that shall remain nameless. And we mentioned previously that Allie Ryan was trying out in Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
She has apparently submitted something to the Swiss internal selection folks. But we have recently learned that she is not done. She wants to hit that Eurovision stage. She has submitted for San Marino.
Mm-hmm.
And after taking a DNA test, it turns out she's part Irish.
Not 100% Irish, just part Irish. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she is also submitting for Ireland.
Yeah.
We learned just within the last 24 hours or so that she also submitted to Estonia.
Yeah.
And they said no.
And that, supposedly she was also submitting for Austria, according to her social media. And they also said no. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily we don't like you, but more, you know, windows closed.
Well, and in the case of Estonia, she's just not Estonian.
Yeah.
Apparently that is a hurdle that needs to be jumped over, and she was not able to do that because she's not Estonian.
Speaking of non-Estonian representatives, we've got rumors of a couple of entrants for Sweden's Melodifestivalen for 2020, one of whom is Viktor Krohn, who...
A storm like this. I was not big on that song.
Just the lack of rhyme scheme, I thought, was the thing that got to me the most about that. But he was lovely.
He was very lovely.
He was
following Hatari was certainly a help.
Yeah.
Twice.
Mm. Yeah, seriously. Yeah. What a draw for him. But yeah, so he supposedly will be returning to Melodifestivalen, if the rumors are accurate. Another potential appearance for Melodifestivalen, we're hearing rumors that the Mamas, so the lovely ladies who were supporting John Lundvik, will be going up as an act on their own, supposedly.
Do you know if Margaret is trying to do it? Another Melody Fest again?
Who knows?
She's been trying the last couple of years.
Not the loss after loss after loss will not cool her down. Someday her time will come.
I think so. Do you think Allie Ryan's going to get in somewhere this year? Or is this going to be a thing we
joke about after the fact?
We hear for a while.
She probably has come to the conclusion that Eurovision fans have long memories.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when we hear a song that we like, we want to hear more of it.
Mm-hmm.
When you are an independent artist, just getting your feet on the ground, you find your fandom. And if this causes a up-and-coming artist to get her name out there, more power to her. I don't begrudge her any of this.
Yeah, she's been the butt of a decent number of jokes in, you know, Eurovision online community already for going to all of these countries and trying to get in. And I'm rooting for her. I hope she gets in. It is a dream that she is pursuing out loud, and I think that's cool, and I hope she gets it.
And the thing is, we're talking about her.
That's right.
Allie,
come on the show. We will help you out as best as we can. We are rooting for you. Now, all that news is cool and good, but...
it pales in comparison to Maruv
Watch. This isn't as fun without Danny.
I know, he's so good at that.
Yeah. Well, according to her Instagram story, Maruv has a small dog. Maruv Watch. And that's the news.
Yeah, we really don't have much else. Yeah.
Tune in November 3rd to find out if she won the MTV Music Award.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. She's nominated as Best Russian Artist, which I'm sure many people are thrilled about.
Yeah, that's great. Good job, everyone.
Maybe she'll sing for Russia someday.
Maybe.
Maruv Watch! And that brings us to our main topic of the day, which is... What is it again?
What, Eric, as you take your first steps, potentially, into the Eurovision on-site experience, what questions do you have for us about getting there, about the process, about a day in the life? What would you like to know, and how can we help you? Because like I said, this is going to be Eurovision number 10 for me. Mm-hmm. It'll be number 6 for Derek.
Mm-hmm.
Where do we start?
Where do we start? I guess the biggest question I have going in, like I know I'm planning to go, but I don't necessarily know in what capacity. So accreditation is something that I'm hoping to find an in for. And I know that your first time, you kind of had something sort of come together at the last minute almost.
No, it wasn't really last minute per se. I knew by January that I had my ticket to Dusseldorf kind of settled. Actually, I got my email for my accreditation going through like on my birthday, which is late January, so that was like the best birthday gift ever.
Aww.
But I was basically invited my first time around by the website that did the news for the fan club that catered to the rest of the world, OGAE Rest of the World. And they knew that I had a little fan site on my own, and they knew that I'm an English speaker. They knew I was attending. So it's like, hey, want to join us? I'm like, sure, why not? Didn't really expect the insanity that I was kind of diving into and how it would rule my life 10 years later, but here we are. There are a number of different levels of accreditation. You can either just go in, no accreditation at all, and still have an absolutely brilliant time.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you don't have a ticket to the show, there's enough stuff going around, you will not feel bereft. It's an amazing, amazing environment. I'm going to go a little bit more into what life is like outside the bubble, but if you are lucky enough to have a lanyard over your shoulders, first level, I guess you could say, is the F accreditation, fan accreditation. And this is assuming that they don't change around the structure between last year and previous years to next year.
Mm-hmm.
Fan accreditation is something that is given by either the broadcaster or by the EBU itself, if you're a part of this international delegation, to a number of selected fans who apply. Generally, it's less than 20 per country. Normally, it is a small, small group. Oftentimes, they will be fans that have been involved with the competition for years. They have to apply. It's this whole process. And they are given limited access to, say, press conferences. They're given access to part of the press center, not necessarily the working spaces, but, you know, to certain lounge areas. It's sort of a nice way to kind of dip your feet in if you're lucky enough to get that. Next level up, and this is the level that I've been receiving over the last couple of years and that you would probably be going for. Eric, because you have these connections with a radio station here in Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
That would probably be your avenue in to receive P accreditation, press accreditation. You're giggling at P accreditation,
yeah,
aren't you?
P accreditation.
Yeah.
Because it's P.
We're grown-ups.
Yeah.
We're totally grown-ups.
P! Oh, sorry.
But you through the radio station, me through ESC Insight, Derek through either ESC Insight or one of the other, you know, US radio, things like that, we have a job to do.
Right.
So we get to go fully behind the scenes. Well, not fully behind the scenes. That's a whole other level.
Limited.
You get to go to the press center, pull up a chair, pull up your computer, and get to work. And that could be anything from watching the rehearsals from the screens that they put up in the press center, interviewing the artists, going to press conferences, really kind of getting your hands into it. Beyond that, if you are actually working with the delegation, you get a D badge, so delegation pass. That's something that Derek and I have been lucky enough to have in the past. I've had that with Bulgaria, Derek has had that with Bulgaria and Austria, and then both of us have had it through American radio as well. Well,
that was just you.
Oh, that was just me.
I was just a P.
Aww.
Yeah.
He was just P, Sam.
He was just P.
Just P.
Just P.
P.
I was you, the rest of the US radio team were all Ds, and I was the one P on the group, and I was so mad.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I'm just joking.
but that'll offer you an extra level of access. That offer you access to what they call the delegation bubble, which is, you know, where all the singers hang out, basically.
And they're just chilling.
They're just chilling.
Back there, they're sitting on the couch playing on their phone.
Yeah. Mm. They're all talking to each other.
It's kind of bizarre just to see them all hanging out.
Yeah. It's like, I've seen you on TV. Yeah. But it's like, no, you forget that these people are just real people.
So. Wearing ridiculous costumes, sitting on a leather couch.
Playing Candy Crush, waiting for the rehearsals to start. Yeah.
So I know a lot of big events like this, there are goodie bags, various swag, things like that. Is that a thing at Eurovision?
It is. It's less over the top than it has been in the last couple of years. I think a lot of countries, both in the setup as well as the countries that are trying to hand out swag as promotional gifts from the delegations, I think a lot of people are like, this isn't as environmentally friendly as it could be, or it's just, you know, really expensive to ship a, you know, 3,000 CDs over from Macedonia.
Mm-hmm. So this isn't like everyone gets an iPad.
No.
I think in my experience, Austria was the biggest swag bag we got, and it was a lot of like sausages and some chocolates and a lot of coupons.
Yeah, oh, is that why they did so well? The song was really good. Austria, please don't hit me.
The entire nation of Austria will come and hit you.
Yeah.
No, I mean, yeah, Austria, the swag bag that they gave to the press that year was nuts. Derek took
I thought it was sausages.
There were nuts in there, too.
There were nuts in there, too. There was all kinds of, it was just a bunch of goofy snacks.
You know, coupon for, I mean, a lot of that I think had to do with there were a lot of corporate sponsorships that were going on. So Almdudler was a sponsor. So you got a coupon for delicious Almdudler, which if you haven't had it, is this magical Austrian soda.
Like to alm the doodles.
So you doodle all your alms. But yeah, I mean, just maps and booklets and this and that. And it took 10 minutes just to unpack this damn bag. Tel Aviv, by contrast.
It looked like an impressive bag of stuff, but really it was just a lot of like papers and coupons and things that were just like, well, we're just going to leave these here.
Yeah, informational stuff.
Yeah, but it was still fun to go through everything. Like, they really pushed it, like, this is a tourist city. They had posters up in the press center, too, promoting, like, all the different places you can go. And that's a huge thing. And I guess we don't have to get into this right now, but a big part of the show is promoting the country as much as the music.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's, like, an expectation of
some countries. Some countries do it more than others, and I think some countries do it more successfully than others.
Sure.
We'll get into that a little bit, but I guess it's sort of the non-tangible swag, I guess you could say.
There's really been... I don't know what to expect of this year, but the last contest in Tel Aviv, they basically got rid of our mailboxes.
The pigeonholes is the what pigeonholes, they used to be called. Yeah.
And delegations would go around and like put CDs in there, put little gifts in there. And sometimes they're just goofy little things to kind of promote the song and get you on their side. And they said, okay, no more mailboxes. If you want to give stuff out, you have to go into the press center and hand it out to people.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, it was really expensive to ship a lot of the stuff. Oftentimes, there would be out and out fights over promotional CDs. What? Like, it would get...
Oh, because people would sell it.
Oh, yeah.
And
they're not supposed to do.
Yeah. And if you leave stuff lying around, like, you could leave your laptop sitting on a table and walk away. It'll be fine. But if you left a promotional CD sitting out...
It's gone.
Somebody's going to swipe it.
Absolutely.
They know what things are worth.
Near the end of the whole thing, they'd collect all the stuff that nobody had claimed. They'd have, like, boxes full of CDs and whatever goofy little promotional stuff they had.
Yeah, t-shirt here, bag there, you know.
And they just stack it all up in this counter, and they just say, okay, at this exact moment, we're going to open it up and just start giving stuff away. And there'll be a line that stretches.
Have you ever seen piranhas attacking a cow?
No, I haven't. Have you?
I've seen the pigeonhole videos. Clear out at a Eurovision press center. Okay.
It starts out like a line from Disneyland. That it turns into 28 days later.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's
you're not selling this super well.
Well, you could just avoid it.
I mean, they don't have the pigeonholes anymore.
You don't have to do that.
No, but it's weird now, walking into the press center and saying, why is there, you know, 200 people standing in line at the information counter?
Right. But again, because they've gotten rid of the pigeonholes, this isn't necessarily something that you're seeing as often. Nowadays, you're having people from the press corps going around and literally saying, hey, would you like a CD from this country? Or we've got coffee mugs that say, Elliot, wake up, on them, which was really actually very cute. Would you like one? And it was very civil and very personal. And honestly, I think it was a better way for delegations and the press corps to interact.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think that that's going to stay that way then?
I think so.
That wasn't just a Tel Aviv thing or whatever?
No,
I think this is the way of the future.
Yeah. Gotcha.
I think also fewer delegations are going for these big CDs that they're handing out. One, because it's so much easier to hand somebody a piece of paper with a QR code or a zip drive with all the files that you need.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was thinking about this the other day. Aside from, like, my Xbox, I don't really have a thing that even plays CDs anymore. My car doesn't. Right. My laptop doesn't. My cat doesn't. Nothing.
He's a good cat.
Quick question before we move on from this one. What is your favorite piece of swag you've ever received?
Oh, my gosh. All right. 2011, the Georgians went all the hell out. They gave away boxes of tea, they gave away the CD, they gave away silk scarves, wine, they gave away playing cards, notebooks, in a wonderful little gift bag that I was very fortunate to get. I still wear the silk scarf like 10 years later. It's
oh, yeah, you showed me that.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. 2 years later, so Malmö, the Belarusians went over the top. At least 5 or 6 different kinds of candy and chocolate, notebooks, CDs, folders and folders and folders of information, a gingerbread star the size of my face, and I believe a few lucky individuals did get bottles of Soleo branded vodka. So,
jeez.
Yeah.
All right.
They invested a lot of money in Ali on the Lenskaya that year.
And how did that work out?
So it made it to the final.
Okay.
That's enough.
Yeah. What about you? What about you, Derek?
Oh, personal favorite. 2016, the Netherlands. Strangely enough, it was Dawa Bob. Came with Netherlands Dawa Bob football scarves.
Oh.
And I still have it, and it's incredible. And I need to go to a game here with Minnesota United wearing the scarf.
Just to see if anybody notices.
I'm sure nobody would notice. Most people have the Minnesota scarves, but a lot of people have like different scarves. Mm-hmm. But it's like, oh, this is a thing here now. I can wear this.
Yeah. You know what everyone else also has is a little outlaw in them.
Oh, jeez.
Netherlands. Humor. I'm very funny.
Oh, good.
So,
times.
Here's my next question. Average day. How does it start? What happens? So on and so forth. I know that what's going on varies from day to day. Sometimes there are rehearsals. Sometimes there is a televised show. Sometimes there is a non-televised show, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But walk me through an average day in the press center.
Depends on how hungover you are from Euroclub the night before.
Got it.
But assuming that you're coherent, and we're going to assume for the scenario that you have press accreditation.
Sure.
Okay.
Or whoever's listening has press accreditation. Yeah. This isn't just about me.
No, of course. It's all about you, Eric. Let's be honest.
The things that you
no.
do.
The rest of the world don't understand.
No.
Before we go into an Albania bowl here.
This is some Truman Show stuff.
So wake up in the morning, roll down to your bus station. If the city is particularly well organized, you may be provided a shuttle that you can get on for free that'll take you, whisk you right over to the press center.
Or a public transportation card that gets you a free ride on the bus or the train.
Yeah.
Would you say that the transportation opens up?
It do.
A little bit. Portugal did not accommodate us
Portugal
at all.
No, Portugal did not really.
Yeah, there was a lot of
but theirs was
for
all
buses.
Aboard. You'd think anyone.
You would think you would, but no, that was not as great. But luckily, you know, in Portugal, public transportation was pretty cheap. So
it was fine. But I just remember like
people
coming from
upset.
Austria and stuff. Like you didn't have to do anything. If you're wearing the lanyard, just get on the bus or the train. You're fine.
Then again, we also had an apartment within walking distance of the arena that year, so that was certainly helpful.
We didn't have to walk to.
I know. Fine, but yeah, there would be years that you just you walk onto your tram and somebody sees the thing around your neck. It's like, yeah, just get on.
And I know, I think Ukraine gave us a train card that we could swipe, and it lasted like a week, and then we just had to go and replace it.
Same with Denmark,
I've no idea what's going to happen next year. They seem like they're a little bit more accommodating.
Yeah, and it also seems like it's going to be a very eco-friendly year, so they're probably going to push public transportation as much as they can.
Instead of like getting a taxi like we did.
Yeah, absolutely. So make it to the arena, walk through security, which is basically like airport-style security.
You're going to have to go through an x-ray. They might patch you down. If anything's unusual, you can't bring in liquids.
Oftentimes.
Sometimes, in the first week, they're a little bit more lax.
Yeah.
I don't want to say like that completely, but they'll let you bring in food.
Unless you're in Lisbon, in which case they're a little bit more draconian about it. But
unless you stand outside and defiantly eat it, they'll just be like, just go in. Literally had a box of donuts, and I'm just like, I paid $12 for these. I'm not waiting outside, and I just started eating them, and the guy just looks at me and goes, just go.
I don't want to watch you eat 11 more donuts.
I know, right?
Where's your sense of adventure? I would watch Derek eat 11 more donuts.
But, like, what time does it starts at, like, 9 a.m.?
Normally, like, the doors will open at around 9-ish or so. First set of rehearsals will normally start around 10-ish.
Rehearsal schedules typically, like, an artist will come out, they'll have 30 minutes to perform. 30, 40 minutes?
Yeah, depending on first or second set of rehearsals.
And
yeah.
Then they'll perform like 2 or 3 times. The first rehearsal is usually pretty messy, rough draft, kind of the rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting to know the stage. They're getting to know the performance. They're getting to know where the cameras are supposed to be. And you can sort of see it in their eyes. They're like just figuring it all out.
Yeah, it's very clinical. You're not necessarily seeing the emotion come out quite yet.
Yeah. And then, so then there'll be like a break. And then the next artist will come out like 15 minutes later.
Mm-hmm.
And
it just goes.
And it just goes all day. And they're doing like, what, 10?
Yeah,
per day or something like that?
9
or 10. And after like a couple of hours, the artist that rehearsed first will come out and do a press conference. So you're kind of running back and forth between watching the rehearsals on the TV. You're not allowed in yet for first rehearsals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
and you can see him on the TV and you can kind of react to it, and then you can run over the press conference and start asking them questions. And they'll start with just like the interviewer throwing them some basic questions like, how did your rehearsal go? And what do you think of our city? And blah, blah. And then they'll open it up to the audience, and the audience will, of course, have a bunch of weird questions to ask them.
So speaking of that, this is not meant to disparage the people that put in a lot of work and do a lot of interviews and things like that, but I feel like watching some of the live press conferences, sometimes the questions just aren't great. That being asked like, would you like to win, or how do you feel about your song, that sort of thing, it's just kind of like,
it really runs the gamut. I think a lot of them want to do that one-on-one interview and they don't want to waste their questions at the press conference, but but at the same time, there's a certain audience that's watching those videos, and they can jump in and be like, hi, I'm so-and-so from
this station, this newspaper,
and it just kind of plugs them a little bit as well.
Mm-hmm. Shows that you're actually present, which is great. Oh, looks like we're being visited by Zelda the Eurocat. Hello, Zelda. She wants attention. So if you hear an occasional meow from the background, that is an adorable orange and white little kitten begging for attention.
She loves Eurovision. This is on topic. So another thing you mentioned a little bit ago about being hungover from the Euro Club. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about being hungover at the Euro Club. Or, I guess, just the Euro Club. Whatever.
Okay. Well,
it's important to understand, when you're working on the day, you're working. You're running around.
Oh, yeah.
Watching the rehearsals, kind of reacting to it. If you're doing articles, recording podcasts, talking to people, networking, going to these press conferences, asking questions if you need to, scheduling interviews. It lasts pretty much all day.
Yeah.
You're there for like sometimes over 12 hours.
Yeah. And you blink and the day is over and you realize, oh, I haven't had lunch.
Yeah, that'll happen too.
Oh, that happens to me a lot anyway.
Yeah.
So that'll be fine. That part of it kind of reminds me of, I have worked a lot of, and this is true of Danny as well, worked a lot of these big like national quiz bowl tournaments, that sort of thing. And it's kind of the same thing. It's kind of a big, long, fun weekend party with your friends, but it's work.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot of work for a lot of hours, but it's still...
It's so great, yeah.
It's a big party. It's where you get to see everyone and all that. So that part makes sense.
Yeah, it's very, very similar in that sort of vibe. But at the end of the day, after you've been putting in all those hours and, you know, pounding the pavement, you know, putting in easily 15,000 steps, running around, going from A to B to C to Q and back again, you want to blow off some steam.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
And usually you can just hop on the shuttle from the arena straight to the Euro Club, wherever it is, and just go to it. And you can usually check your bag or your coat, and they have a bar, and they have a little
restaurant.
There's some little food snacky things, and they just got music blaring.
So this is like a nightclub.
Yes.
Yeah, but oftentimes there have been places where they will have different kind of settings for it. Like in Austria, they held the Euro Club within a brewery, the Jodekringer Brewery, which was pretty cool.
Well, they also did the thing where they, like for the first week, it was at a different location every night.
And just was cycling around the city.
The unofficial Euro Club. And then finally it ended up at this brewery.
Yeah, so you got to really explore the city a little bit too. So in Stockholm, which would have been 2016, they were like, you know what, we're just going to have a two-story tent. It was this massive pop-up temporary structure,
furnished
two levels.
By IKEA.
Yeah, it was quite literally furnished by IKEA, yeah. And it was this fantastic club that they set up for us, you know.
It cheaper drinks than at some of the local bars.
Which in Stockholm is worth its weight in gold.
And we were
on
the water.
Oh yeah, it was gorgeous.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah,
it was right by the palace?
Yep.
Wow.
It was just a great location.
It really was. And then there have been times where it's sort of incongruous locations. The Euro Club in Baku was held at the Palace of Hand Sport, which is
Hand Sport.
Yeah, it's basically just a basketball arena like down the road from the venue. Yeah, you know, had a club, had a little VIP area, but a little bit strange to have your Euro Club in a sports arena. They also weren't really playing a lot of Eurovision music at the Euro Club in Baku, but that's a story for another day.
Yeah, let's hold up on that one.
Yeah, but it's a great place for people with accreditation, fan, press, delegations, to go hang out, forget about the hard work that they put in for the day. And then at the same time, though, some of these delegations do end up putting in a little bit more work and having mini concerts at the Euro Club.
Yeah, so like the actual Eurovision artists also show up and
Absolutely. So there's the Nordic Party is a big one that's been happening recently, where all of the singers from the Nordic countries will go and, you know, they'll party and have a great time, but they'll go up on stage and sing their song, maybe a follow-up single, maybe a Eurovision cover that they've done in the past. A couple years ago, Carl Espen, who sang for Norway in 2014.
Oh, he was great.
Yeah, he was awesome. He did a great cover randomly of Katy Perry's Roar in like this sort of sweet, introspective acoustic style that was odd, but awesome.
I can't even picture that.
He was great.
Yeah.
He was actually really good.
It's probably on YouTube somewhere.
I think I may have recorded it.
He is super chill. Like, the song was super chill. It didn't have a bombastic, I mean, just a very good voice, but not like a big, big, powerful voice or anything like that. And
but it worked.
That is the opposite of what Roar is.
I know. It was more of like the little kitten inside of the big man just trying to get out.
Oh,
it was very sweet.
That's lovely.
Yeah. So there's the Euro Club, and then there's oftentimes the local Eurovision Club will put on what they call the Euro Cafe, which is also open to people who might not necessarily have accreditations. You can sometimes buy day passes or like wristbands for the entire fortnight, and there will be events going on there. There could be anything from, you know, drink specials and dancing to sometimes there'll be gigs there. Sometimes there will be trivia.
Trivia?
There could be trivia. There might even be some Eurovision karaoke,
oh,
if you're lucky.
Yes!
Enough.
Yes, that was going to be my next question. I want Eurovision karaoke everywhere, all the time. That's what I want, specifically.
They can make that happen.
Sweet. Yeah. I have been practicing my biscotti. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do the whole routine as many times as they will let me until I am told to leave the country.
Are you going to bring the costume too?
I figure it'll be cheaper to just buy one there.
Oh, that's fair.
I assume that they'll be available.
I think that's reasonable, yeah. So you got the Euro Club, you got the Euro Cafe. There's also many places will put up what they call the Eurovision Village, which is this big open space. They had an awesome one in Tel Aviv, right on the beach. They had a big one in Lisbon, right in the middle of Praça de Comércio, right on the Tagus River, where it's big stages. So, you know, a lot of these performances, like we were mentioning before, open to the public, a lot of food, and I think the one in Tel Aviv this year was somehow combined with like Tel Aviv Restaurant Week, or there was some sort of a food festival that was going on. So they
all combined. The booths were like local restaurants, and they had all this food there.
Yeah, so it was combining the Eurovision festivities with a food festival,
and another like local event too.
Yeah,
that also does a good job of highlighting the city and the culture.
Absolutely,
that's great.
And if you can't get a ticket to the show, oftentimes they'll have massive screens up at the Eurovision Village, so you could just watch the show with like a couple thousand of your new closest friends.
All right.
And that is a really, really great way for people to get out into the city and to embrace what the host community has to offer. And Tel Aviv, I think, was actually really, really good at that. Part of it was by virtue of there being a few days off within the festivities. There were a couple national holidays that were going on. So, you know, there were no rehearsals. So people had to get out and explore. And there was also a big connection between the show organizing as well as the Tel Aviv Tourism Bureau. So they were offering tours of the city, everything from food tours. Derek and I ended up doing a tour at Israel's very first whiskey distillery, which was really very cool.
Is it very first? Is it fairly new?
It is very...
Less than 5 years?
It is so new that what they are producing cannot yet be called whiskey.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
That has to be 3 years aged before they can call it that. So they were making a lot of gin.
Nice.
Which you can do a lot more quickly. That was a really fun day.
Do you get a lot of time to get out and do those things?
That depends year by year.
And depends on what your role there is. If you're working with a press group and you're really covering every single rehearsal and everything, your time's gonna be a lot more limited.
Yeah.
Like the first couple of years I was there, I was surprised at how little time I had to explore.
I think a lot of that also is when it's your first couple of years, you want to do everything.
You don't
want to miss a moment. You almost feel a little bit guilty. Like FOMO sets in. Like you feel a little bit guilty if you don't see every rehearsal or every press conference. And then by the end of your first year, you realize you can't clone yourself. You can't be everywhere at once. So don't be afraid to get out of the bubble.
Yep.
Embrace the city. Like especially for American fans and American press going out there, we are, you know, flying a quarter of the way around the world to see some of these places.
You do have a decent amount of time. If you schedule it right, if you look at, I mean, they release the rehearsal schedule and everything well in advance, you'll have days to yourself where you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Like in Tel Aviv, we went to the Dead Sea, and then we went to Jerusalem for a day.
Yep, did a couple of great food tours.
Oh, yeah, the food tours are awesome.
Oh, my gosh.
And like the days when they do the shows themselves, like the full dress rehearsal and the actual show itself, you don't really need to be there until the show starts, which is like at 9. So you can go out and spend the day just...
That's kind of interesting that those are the days where you can get out more, the big days.
Oftentimes, you wouldn't expect it to be that way, but really the only other thing that is going on, normally the days of shows, are one last full dress rehearsal, and there have already been two full dress rehearsals the previous day.
Right, okay.
So and you wouldn't necessarily have to stick around for every single one of those.
But if you don't, you'll miss it!
You'll miss
four
of them.
What do you do?
But then you've also missed, you know, hanging out at a great little restaurant or cafe in Rotterdam.
Could have gotten more Choco Mel.
One of the coolest things about being behind the scenes, you get to watch watch the rehearsals, you get to see you watch it develop into the show itself. But one of the really cool things is you get to see the jury final, which you never get to see otherwise.
Because it's just not on TV.
Yeah, and you start to understand where some of those jury points come from, because countries will have spectacular performances during the jury final, or really rough performances, to put it nicely. Italy 2015 had a very challenging jury final. And
what do you mean by challenging?
They were just off their game. And you could tell just by looking at them. They seemed really distracted. One of them was having some troubles. And they were just like not quite there.
Yeah, they hadn't gelled. Yeah.
And it just was kind of a mess when they did the actual final. They were on. They were great. The fans loved them. Spectacular job. But the juries didn't really turn out for them. And you're kind of like, well, why not? They were great. Because they saw a different performance and scored it the day before.
Yeah, the same thing happened with the United Kingdom in 2011 as well. You know, came in top five with the public, I think, but had a very, very weak jury performance the night before the final. And that took them out of the top 10.
Interesting that those are both big five, that they didn't have the semifinal.
You do see some changes, though, going from the jury to the televote final, because like sometimes they hold back a little bit in a certain show and then give it all on the other one. And maybe they're having some difficulty with their voice or something, and they're just being a little bit more conservative. But I wonder sometimes, it's like, okay, this is the jury, we really got to do well in this one, and then the televote we can just kind of ease off a little bit.
You would think it would be a little bit different, though, considering that if you're looking forward beyond the show, looking forward to your career, unless you're in the United States, this is the clip that will be shown on YouTube.
Yeah, I feel like you kind of want to just be good the whole time. But I know that sometimes that's just not how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, voices go out. There are a lot of variables that come into play. And you never quite know how they're all going to shake out until things come across your screen, really.
That is really cool. There really is so much more than, you know, you can just go watch on Netflix right now, that sort of thing.
There is literally 2 weeks worth of activity that goes on beyond the shows that you see in the end product. There are hours upon hours upon hours of rehearsals and dialogue and subtle changes that have to come into play before a final product is delivered across your TV screen. And even we in the press center only see a tiny fragment of that. I mean, there is probably somebody right now, probably not right now because it's in Europe, they're probably asleep as we're recording this. There's probably an internal selected artist who knows that they're going to Eurovision, hasn't announced it quite yet, that is pounding the pavement, working out their choreography, working out their vocals right now. And this is months in advance. This is still 2019 that we're talking about. This kind of stuff goes on for months, if not years.
Yeah. Certain countries probably pick an artist a year in advance, and they're have like staging directors putting stuff together.
I mean, Hoover Phonic, great example.
Oh, yeah, they're already they've been working on that probably for a few months now.
Well, not only that, but considering that last year's Belgian representative was the other broadcaster. They may have already been in discussion with the Belgian broadcaster
for over a year,
which
will be super interesting to see the final product on that one.
Yeah, that I still don't really know what to expect there, but I'm really excited.
He's so excited.
It would be great to go to Belgium in 2021.
Yep,
I'd be happy with that.
Something else that we definitely wanted to talk about before we kind of wrap up: one of the most important intangible things about the press center are the people in it, you know.
Really?
Yeah, who'd have thunk. I know it's, you know, simplified, but the line between journalist and fan at a Eurovision press center is highly, highly blurred. The people at the press center, especially in week one, the people who really watch and really nitpick these rehearsals, they are there at the press center because they love it. Nobody goes to a Eurovision press center in week one if they despise the show.
Or if they're there because of their job.
Yeah. The people who are contracted to go to Eurovision from, you know, higher newspapers or whatever, you know, the CNNs, the, you know, the BBC. BBC, they don't normally come until week two.
And they're all business.
Yeah.
They come in early, they grab a table.
And they're done.
They're just stone-faced, watching everything happen, typing away.
Yep.
Got the big cameras out, doing little interviews.
Right. Big camera, little interview. Very little,
they just grab people, too. Yeah. They'll walk around, like you got grabbed a few times.
Oh, yeah.
Someone's like, hey, can we talk to you? You're an American, right? And then you're on German news television.
Live, which
is like
really
the
freaky.
Opposite of what normally happens to Americans in Europe. So that's interesting.
Yeah. but the people who you see behind the scenes at the press center are part of this crazy traveling circus that I've now known for almost a decade. And then, you know, people keep kind of getting added to the pile, like you, Derek, like other, you know, members of our friend circle. And it's sort of like the strange Katamari of people just getting sucked in as the contest just rolls from one place to another, just limbs sticking
it's
out.
Unstoppable.
So, I mean, you go in there, and I mean, I've used this comparison before, but the press center vibe is not too dissimilar from walking into a sci-fi convention. Like, if you walk into a room and you don't really know anybody, but you know that everybody in that room has something in common with you, it's a little bit easier to get your foot in the door. It's a bit easier to make a conversation. You know, you pull up a seat next to somebody who has, you know, at the table, if there's an extra seat, and say, hey, can I join you? And you start talking about this rehearsal or that thing, and suddenly you have a best friend. Or somebody you can bounce ideas off of, or, you know, rope into your podcast, or interview for your article. And everybody just kind of feeds off of each other. And with few exceptions, it's really not a very backstabby kind of environment.
Unless you leave your swag out.
Yeah, in which case...
Watch out.
Yeah, you will never see that that Elliot wake-up coffee mug ever again.
No, he needed that.
Yeah.
Liam Neeson movie in the making.
Ooh. So anyway, after everything is kind of wrapped up, we have a winner for the contest. And people are packing their stuff up, getting those last little bits of swag if they can get their hands on it.
So it's important to note that watching the show in the room,
yeah,
the room is packed. Everyone's like got chairs pointed to every single TV, and there's TVs all over the place. There's a big screen with a projected, and it's just dead silent during like the moments in between. And then when the songs come on, like you can tell where the fans are because they're singing along.
Yeah.
And if everyone's singing along, you're like, this is a good one.
And then every once in a while, you'll see a group of journalists from a respective country like run up to the screen.
Oh, and just go ballistic.
Yeah, flags waving.
The Spaniards?
The Spaniards.
And the Israelis, yeah. I think, are noticeably boisterous. Yeah.
The Greek fans as
well.
Greeks when,
too, yeah.
When they're in the finals, yes.
Aww.
Oh. But yeah, that's... And when there's a fan favorite, like, people go nuts. Like,
oh, yeah. Duncan was huge.
Kaino was, you know,
was
very
huge.
Popular. Hattori.
Hattori got some attention.
Oh, yes. All the debauchery that was happening in the Brit... I have no idea.
But it's a weird thing. And it happens, like, so fast.
Yeah.
Like, that stinger will come on, and you'll be like, okay, it's showtime, and everyone's applauding, and then quiet. And it's, like, a 4 or 5 hour show.
And
it zips by, like, nothing.
I mean, even watching it on TV, it maybe drags a little bit during the voting, because they're just going to... Here's all the songs again, like, 3 or 4 times. But
as soon as that voting kicks in, though...
It's like the Oscars. It's just, there's always something interesting happening.
Yeah. But then it's over.
And it just ends.
It's
like,
over.
Quickly.
And it's like the tide has just come out, and you're just left with, you know, a random starfish and...
And
like,
a shoe.
You, like, yeah, it's like...
What?
Oh, you haven't been to the beach lately.
We live in Minnesota.
Yeah, that is true.
But it's like suddenly the tide comes out and it's like, I've just been through this thing and it's over. It's done.
And everyone's like, all right, let's go home.
Yeah.
Everyone just packs up their stuff and walks out.
Yeah, mass exodus to the airport. You often don't get to say goodbye to all the people who you wanted to say goodbye to.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people fly home like the next morning or right after the show.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a Saturday night show.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe got to be back to work on Monday, wherever you live.
Yeah.
So
we did. Well, I did anyway.
Yeah, I mean...
When Danny and I were in Amsterdam, we left on a Sunday morning.
Yep.
And I went to work the next day.
Yep.
Which was mostly fine.
Those first couple days are okay, and then it catches up with you.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah. You think you're fine, and then...
It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you can barely stand up.
Yeah.
But you often... People will often say that they have something called PED, post-Eurovision depression. And this is obviously not to make light of clinical depression or mental illness, but this is the sort of the come down and the letdown of, we've been building this up for an entire year and now it's over.
Oh yeah, I mean, I can attest to, I haven't been to Eurovision yet, but other situations where there is a big thing coming up that you've spent all of this mental energy on, and then all of a sudden it's gone, and all of these things that you've built up just sort of crumble almost.
Yeah.
I mean, Sam, you and I went to Chicago a few months ago. I had an audition for Jeopardy.
Woo.
And I had put a lot of energy into being just ready for that. That basically when the moment came where it was time to go home, I just felt terrible.
It's like a vacuum.
And nothing was wrong. We had a great time. The audition, I think, went pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Still need to call me. Please call me. Jeopardy, friend of the show.
We saw Hamilton.
We saw Hamilton. We ate food. We went to Italy, which is great. It's like Italy, but you can eat it. It's awesome. Awesome place. Chicago's a great city, and it was great. But just leaving, going home, there was yeah, like this vacuum, this just sort of emptiness. I can imagine something as big as Eurovision that is the spectacle that it is, and that especially for us, the distance and the travel is there. That's a big thing to just have, and then just have it be gone.
Yeah.
Not gone, but like...
over.
Yeah.
Over.
In the past.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's something too, like all the little things that lead up to it. Like you're anticipating every song being released and hearing them all, and then having our like preview party and getting scores and like getting people interested in it, and then going there and watching all the rehearsals, and it just builds and builds and builds and builds and builds until this moment, and then it just says, "Well, thanks for watching. Good night."
Mm-hmm.
And it just ends so quickly, like flipping a switch.
Yeah, I was gonna say like getting your legs waxed, but I don't think either of you guys can really sympathize with that.
Well, you would think no, I can't. No.
I'll say though, going sometimes there's like you go to the Euro Club after the show and people are ecstatic. Like it just everyone's just booming. I know when Sweden won in 2015, we went to the Euro Club, we were there until like 6 a.m.
Oh yeah.
Oh.
And just all night long, and the sun was coming up, and I'm like, are we still doing this? And Mons came out and did a performance, and we just missed it.
Oh.
And then you ended up getting pushed by one of his bodyguards. Pushed by his
bodyguard, and then he was like, he said, "Hey, sorry about that," holding the trophy. And walk it down.
Like, you're the guy.
I'm like, you're the guy. And then we ran into him a couple years later in Ukraine, and he's like, "I'm Mons Zemrlo," and I'm like, "Of course you are." Yeah. There's a big come down after the fact, and that you just it's going home and going back to work and realizing it's gonna be like 6 or 7 months before we hear anything again.
Mm-hmm.
Like September 1st rolls around, and then it slowly starts eking out again.
Yep.
But during that time, you're just kind of like, all right, now what?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
So how do you deal with that?
A lot of it is, you know, you just kind of ride the wave. A lot of it is you just hold fast to the friendships that you made out there.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, you know, I've got friends right around me, including around this table, to geek out with.
Yeah.
I think the OGAE does a really great job with having the second chance contest that, you know, it's something else to keep the fandom involved.
Fill the void a little bit. Yeah.
There's another thing too, especially if you're involved in these things, there's sort of like the analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have these ways to process all this information that you've just witnessed. As like if you're a casual fan and the show ends, it's like, okay, I'm gonna go home now. I'm done. I had a great time. But you know, you got podcasts, you got articles, you've got discussions, you got forums you can jump on, you can analyze things, you can see how the scoring broke down, you can kind of start to make sense of it, and there's still a lot to be understood and figure it out.
She's back.
And also, if you wanted to delve into this, you've got Junior about six months after the final. So there's at least another little thing to kind of keep you held over. I mean, fortunately, we live in an age where it's easy for us to communicate with the fandom. Like, some of my closest friends in the Eurovision world live in Scotland, for example. And I can literally just hop on my computer at any point and just say, "Hey, how's it going?" And we can geek out. Or I can literally just, you know, go over to either of your apartments and say, "Hey, can we just watch this 2015 contest?"
Let's do it.
Let's do it right now.
And you guys have talked about this before, the whole world of artists that never made it. Like, the Second Chance Party is a great avenue to that, but then you're kind of processing all these national finals, but then you have this opportunity to, like, go and explore.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they have albums out. Maybe they've released other singles. Maybe they've, you know...
Yeah.
Got other things you can look into.
It's like a scavenger hunt.
Yeah.
Hmm. I guess, ultimately, there's always the next Eurovision.
Exactly. And if you go to your first one and you're like, this is a place for me, and in that kind of environment, there often is a place for all sorts of people. So you feel welcome. We're all, especially the table that I sit at, we're all kind of weird little misfits in our own way. You know, we've got the geeks, we've got the number crunchers, we've got the punk rockers, we've got the kilted ones.
We've got Zelda.
We've got Australians. We've got...
We got that cat.
We got that guy from the BBC who just showed up for no reason.
Oh, yeah, him. There's a place for everybody, and if you find your place, chances are you'll be welcome back the next year if you want to go.
Hmm.
So you always have the hope of the following year that also drives you forward, and that's what's driven me forward for the last decade.
Hmm.
And I'm really, really thrilled that you're going to be there with us, hopefully.
I believe... very strongly that we'll find a way.
All right, guys. If you have any questions about your first Eurovision, I actually have a really great article that I wrote for Insight a while ago, actually.
We'll link to it in the comments.
Yeah. So go on to escinsight.com. Either look up my articles that I've written in the past. Also, just, you know, I can use the hits. Why the heck not? But it's called So You Want to Go to Eurovision Next Year. It was written after Sweden won in 2015, so some of the information is kind of Swedocentric, but a lot of the information is still relevant. relevant and still stands. Feel free to read that. Leave a comment on the article if you'd like to. I'm happy to answer any questions about it. Again, reach out to us on social media at 12pointsUSA on either Twitter or Facebook. You could reach me directly on Twitter at ESC Insider. Eric?
I am on Twitter at Eric is tweeting, E-R-I-K is tweeting.
Or you could reach us at 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com. Happy to answer any questions you've got for us. We're generally friendly folks, believe it or not.
Generally.
Yeah. Good talk, guys.
Yeah.
Good talk. All right. Yeah. Now, Eric, get your butt back to Schiphol Airport and bring Danny back.
Look, I have a lot going on. Can we just, like...
Fine, I'll do it.
All right, thanks.
Hey, America.
If you could pick up some cheese, too.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Stroopwafels, too?
Stroopwafels, yeah. Stroopwafels. And some gin.
Okay, of course.
Okay, got a shopping list for you.
All right, I got that. But in the meantime, America...
Stop listening now! Bring it a big, 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 big